That's actually not exactly true, but that would be nice, though. Come here all the way from Toronto just for this meeting. And maybe that's exactly what it is, you know. This is a. It's interesting how God works, isn't it? It's mysterious sometimes, and you know, I'm just so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, what it's done for me. And I may surprise you a little bit here tonight. I've only been sober for a very short period of time. I've only been sober for about 100 days. But God has done incredible things for me in that 100 days. Actually, He probably started working on me a long time ago. I first darkened the doors of an AA meeting about 7 years ago. And it was kind of a traumatic experience for me, because it was at that meeting that I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol. But something happened shortly thereafter, and I started to realize that I just, for some reason, I just couldn't get it. I didn't understand the concept of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't understand the concept of alcoholism. It took me 7 years to realize that there's actually two parts to the first step. There's the step of admitting that we're powerless over alcohol, and then there's a step of admitting that our lives have become unmanageable. And I think that's really the illness of this disease. I'd like to read a section from page 58 that really sums up who I am and my story. It really sums it up very well. And I'm going to read it here. It's the third. Yeah, here we are. I love this sentence. To me, this sentence really sums up my life. It's this. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. That sentence really sums up my life. I thought I could find an easier, softer way. I love that sentence because there's two parts to it. There's the thinking part of it, and then there's the seeking the easier, softer way. And most of my life has been a life of bullshitting. I've really spent most of my life bullshitting, lying my way into things, lying here, lying there, lying to get whatever I could get. I learned that from a very young age, that lying was the way to go. For some reason, that's just the way I was wired. I'm one of these alcoholics. I believe that I was an alcoholic. I was born that way. I was born at 3 weeks old. I was put up for adoption, and I grew up in a Baptist home where there was no alcohol whatsoever. My parents never drank. There was never talk of alcohol. It just didn't exist in my household. My parents were loving parents. They taught me good morals. They encouraged me to work hard at school, to pursue higher education, etc., etc. And it wasn't until that my two kids were born that I thought I got very curious, because I had these two youngsters. They were my only known biological relatives that I'd ever experienced. And I had an opportunity, I had a little bit of information to track down my biological family. And this was approximately about 8 years ago. And I was able to discover that there was brutal alcoholism, not only on the paternal side of my family, where my relatives, my grandparents, my great-grandparents literally drank themselves to death, but there was brutal alcoholism on my maternal side of the family as well. Unfortunately, about 8 years ago, my alcoholism had progressed so far that there wasn't a whole lot I could have done about it anyways. Now, at that time, I was still having fun drinking. I was still enjoying drinking. And so there was nothing really that I wanted to do about it. I knew that I had to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I had to do something about it. So I looked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't like it. I'm sure all of us have had that experience. You first go to AA. I had no interest in AA. I looked into it, didn't like it. I tried it again a few years later. And recently, it's really amazing what God has done for me. So this whole idea of thinking, I'd like to focus on that today for a few minutes. I'd like to bring up something here that I find interesting. I'm going to use my BlackBerry here to help me. And, you know, on the back of meeting lists, at least up in Canada, we have the 20 questions, right? And I was looking at those 20 questions the other day, and I was thinking about this sentence, you know, that we thought we could find an easier, softer way. And I started reading them, and I thought, you know what would happen if I replaced the word drinking with thinking? And so I started reading them. So, for example, here, I'll read this one to you. Do you lose time from work due to your thinking? Is thinking making your home life unhappy? Here's one. Is thinking affecting your reputation? Have you ever felt remorse after thinking? Have you gotten into financial difficulties as a result of your thinking? Does your thinking make you careless of your family's welfare? Has your ambition decreased since thinking? Is thinking jeopardizing your job or business? And I love this one. Do you think alone? Very dangerous for an active alcoholic, right? Has your physician ever treated you for thinking? And it goes on and goes on, right? And really, that was my dilemma, is my thought life, my thought pattern. And we were joking around in the kitchen there a while ago about, you know, saying, I'm just going to go to the liquor store, I'm just going to buy a six-pack, you know, and that should do me for the day. And, you know, and up in Canada, we don't have, we have specific, alcohol is sold through government stores, and they pretty well monopolize the business. So you have to drive a little ways. You can't just go to a corner store, let's put it that way. So, you know, I would drive and get a six-pack, and I'd say, that'll do me for the day. And I'll come home, and I've had that finished. And I face a dilemma. I have to drive now back to pick up another six-pack. And we were kidding around saying, you know, at the time, we didn't think that was... The only thing stupid about that is we should have just picked up the 24 and the 26er and everything else along the way, right? That's what we should have done. But, you know, the... this whole idea of thinking wrong about where I was in many ways is just mind-boggling. I'm going to share here a few things that I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about my drinking career, but I will share this, is towards the end of my drinking, I'd say pretty well all of us came in here as a result of some kind of crisis. Would everyone agree? There was some kind of crisis going on. I don't think anyone sort of got in here by accident, right? You walked into an AA meeting and you're like, wow, this is great, you know? I think I'm going to sort of get into this. You know, we all sort of got into AA because of some kind of crisis, or we sought help of some kind because of a crisis. And for me, I think Rick Warren really sums up sort of my experience. You know, God sort of has four types of tools that he uses to affect humility in us. And the first tool that he uses is a chisel. And he takes the chisel off those sharp edges in our lives. If that doesn't work, he uses a hammer. And he knocks off the edges. And if those edges are still too hard, he turns to a sledgehammer. And if he needs to use the sledgehammer, he will. Very painful, but he will. In my personal experience, what brought me here is I could see God putting the sledgehammer down, walking down to the tool shed with a little grin on his face, to get out the jackhammer. And that's what I saw coming. Because I saw my life, you know, I don't have the story where I went to jail or anything like that. My story was I could see my whole financial world coming crashing down. I could see my career coming crashing down. I could see myself losing absolutely everything. And I just, it disgusted me about the state of mind I was in more than anything else. When I was, the other day I was reading about this U.S. Marine who spent time in World War II, and he was describing his experience when he was in prison, and as a prisoner of war. And he described it this way in these words, and I'll read this to you. I'll quote, "The ever-impending fear of death and the loss of feeling like a human being. At the end of my drinking career, that's exactly how I felt. I was trapped. When I would drive to the liquor store, there, I remember one time, I was trying everything. I was reading self-help books. I was going to psychotherapists. I was exercising. I was doing all the things the big book talks about. And I remember one time leaving a psychotherapist's office after manipulating the psychotherapist into believing that everything was going well for Cam Watson. And I'm driving to the liquor store and I'm pounding on the steering wheel. And I'm saying, I don't want to do this, but I still drove to the liquor store. And I'm sitting out in front of the liquor store and I'm literally banging on the thing and I'm saying, I don't want to drink today. But I still got out of my car. And I still walked into that liquor store. And I still bought my boots. And within half an hour, I was drunk. That's how trapped I was. It was brutal. And I hated it. And the decision-making that I was doing was ridiculous. You know? Stupid things. Everyone knows that. Everyone here understands that. Just continuous stupid decision-making. In hindsight now, I can see that. But I was trapped. I was like that prisoner, and I felt less human. Towards the end, I couldn't even go to work anymore. I didn't want to go to work. I would sit at home by myself, and I would drink, and I would surf the internet. And guess what I would do on the internet? I was still searching for an answer. I would go to websites like Wikipedia, and I would learn everything I could about addiction and alcoholism. And the effect it has on the physiological and medical side of alcoholism, I thought that was somehow that could help me. And I would sit there and it was utterly depressing. By this stage of the game, my ex-wife and I had split up because of my drinking. I had isolated myself from my family and friends. Fortunately, I hadn't gotten myself into a lot of legal trouble. About 14, 16 months ago, I got nailed for impaired driving, and I was able to fight that charge, and I was able to get off. Cost me a lot of money and legal fees, and I remember being so proud of myself that I was able to get over this, that I was able to overcome this, and just the utter insanity of our thinking. I'm going to turn to page 23 here in the big book. I'm going to read another one of my favorite sentences. It says this, "Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body." I remember, and it's still very fresh for me, is the utter obsession, planning out my day to go get that drink, planning out my morning, canceling appointments, lying to people that cared for me, just so I could strategize and plan out that first drink, the insanity of the first drink. And all this stuff was going on. Folks, I don't have a drinking problem, okay? My problem is not with alcohol. I have a buddy that I've drunk with for years. And he would ask me off and on, back when I really, where it wasn't all that clear to me what in the heck alcoholism was, what this illness really is. And he would ask me, say, "Cam, you know, Cam, do you think I'm an alcoholic?" And I'd say, "I don't know." I said, "Maybe." Now I know that he's not. Because for him, drinking does get him into trouble, or at least it did. But all he had to do was take the alcohol out of the equation, and life got better for him. You know, the big book tells us about the alcohol of our type. And for me, you take alcohol from Pam, if you take alcohol away from me, my life is a disaster. I remember the first time I tasted alcohol, the first time I put it in my body. It's like all my answers were solved. It's like I started actually feeling normal. I felt like a normal human being. So you remove alcohol from an active alcoholic named Cam W., Cam Watson, you got a major problem. He's probably better off to continue drinking. So it was a solution for me. Alcohol was a solution. You know, I don't know if there's any fans here of heavy music from the 80s, but we all are aware of that bumbling TV fool Ozzy Osbourne. Remember him? He had a TV show a little while ago. But back in the 80s, he wrote a very interesting song describing his own personal challenges with alcohol. And I often remember the opening verse of it, where he says, "Wine is fine, whiskey's quicker, suicide is slow with liquor. Grab a bottle, drown your sorrows, and watch it wash away tomorrows." It's a solution, all right. At first, it was a solution to help me feel normal. I could go to parties, I could go to dances, I can go to whatever, any type of event, or even I felt I could work better when I was drinking. It was a solution for me, it really was. But eventually it became a suicide solution. And it was a way that led me to some pretty bad experiences and some very dark times. And I'd like to now share with you what happened to me. How did I come? If you folks could have seen me towards my end compared to now, it's incredible what God has done for me. And I'd like to share with you how God literally completely changed my life. I grew up in the church, and I had all kinds of religious convictions. I was well-versed in the Bible, religion. You know, I thought I knew it all. And I remember the first time I came out to Alcoholics Anonymous, I remember I had this spiritual pride about me, right? And I'm listening to the people talk about their spiritual experiences, and I just thought I had it all together. Well, I now know that was the furthest thing from the truth. Absolutely the furthest thing from the truth. And in the last couple of years, I became very, very disillusioned with my own spiritual convictions. I became almost resentful towards God, my higher power. I stopped communicating with my higher power. I was angry. Like, you know, God, I grew up in the church, you know. I used to read the Bible. I used to pray. I used to do this. I used to do that. Why won't you take away this problem I have? My life could be so perfect without this problem. And this was my struggle. It was like there was this massive chasm between step one that says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and the second part of step one that says that our lives have become unmanageable. God was waiting for something from me. My higher power was waiting for me to say something very simple, but I just couldn't see it. I was so full of myself. I'd like to read another one of my very, very favorite sentences out of the big book, page 62. Where it says this, it says, "Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles." Folks, that was my problem. And for most of us alcoholics, that was a big, big deal that we had. That was, in many ways, an insurmountable challenge to overcome. Another one of my favorite sentences I'm going to read. It's on page 45 of the big book. It says this: lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Now we're getting into step two. But all along, my biological mother, I met her about 8 years ago. She gave me my first big book. And I remember sitting down and reading it, trying to understand what it was all about. I just couldn't get it. You know, I just wasn't ready. And it seems to be this thing, you know, about being ready to receive from God. There seems to be something about that in this incredible, powerful program of Alcoholics Anonymous and finding God. I'd like to point out another passage that my sponsor, I have the most amazing sponsor. It was a gift from God. I believe it's on page 59. And it's interesting. He mentions this to me, and I don't know, I haven't been around long enough to hear what other people have to say about this, but, you know, he mentions when this section of the big book was written, it was written for a very specific purpose, where it says, remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. I remember when I read that, I often joke around with myself. I say, you know, I was so full of myself, and I used to think that I was cunning, baffling, and powerful. Man, was I ever kidding myself. Anyways, it says this: remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. I remember my sponsor telling me, Cam, before you even start working the steps, you've got to try to find God. You've got to try to find God to make these steps come real, to make them come alive to you. And he said that's why the writers of this book put it that way. May you find him now before the 12 steps, the program of recovery, is laid out in the big book. And I find that very interesting. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I tried everything. Like I said, I tried exercise, I tried eating well, I tried morality, I tried reading self-help books, I tried going to psychotherapists. There just wasn't any answer for me. I was trapped. And I started having these ideas in my mind that I was going to resort myself to drinking myself to death. That's really what I thought. I thought I was pushed. I thought I was finished. I thought I was done. Drink myself to death. That's exactly what I'm going to do. And it wasn't until I turned to a colleague of mine at work, and who I had bullshitted left, right, and center. You know, I thought I was one of the best bullshitters around until I came to AA. And I met people who were a lot better at it than me. It's too bad. I thought I was at least really, really good at something, you know. But, you know, there's a few that have outdone me. So I turned to her and my colleague at work, and she put me on to who is now my sponsor. And to me, that was really the first real evidence that God was starting to take care of me. And this sponsor of mine had this incredible way. I don't know if you've experienced this, but this sponsor of mine had this way about him where he could say things to me that no one else could. He would say to me things like, I didn't want to have anything to do with AA. And he said to me, you know, I was going on about this bullshit cognitive behavioral therapy stuff. And he let me talk. And he said, Cam, why don't you just come up to this one meeting? And normally I would say, there's no way. There's no way in hell I'm going to. But he said, yeah, just come on into this one meeting. I said, okay. So I went into it. He said, Cam, what did you think of that? I said, it was okay. He said, Cam, why don't you come up to another meeting? And so, you know, this program is a program of faith, and I'm starting to see how that played out in my life. I'm able to see how that played out. And God was using this gentleman, and he was using him to help me come to a place where he could literally change my heart and my mind. And through these little baby steps that I took, those little baby steps were actually an act of faith on my part. And God was watching me. He was watching and saying, okay, let's see. And he was waiting for me. And so I go to another meeting. And then I started saying to myself, I started having this thought in my mind, okay, you know, I'm going to give this program a chance. I'm going to give it a chance. And so one of the first things I did was I needed, you know, I'm fairly analytical. I needed logic. And so I turned to the first sentence on page 58, and I memorized it. And I remember because someone said to me, he said, you know, why are you doing that? Why are you going to A? And I said, well, you know, they said, you know, I hear that A doesn't work. Until I memorized the first sentence. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. If that's true, then the success rate has to be pretty damn high. Like I'm talking approaching 100%. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed their path. And I said that sentence over and over in my mind. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed their path. And I say that over and over and over. And I started to believe that. So I kept on going to meetings. And fortunately, I was able to meet some very, very spiritual individuals in the program. Guys who were really connected with God. Really connected. And they guided me. And they said to me, Cam, you know, go to this meeting. It's a book study meeting. You'll dig right into the meat of the book. And I like that. I love that kind of stuff anyways. So I sort of had a predisposition towards that. But all along that I was doing this, I was still drinking. The bottle still had hold of me. And I was still going to the liquor store and on the way crying out, I don't want to do this. I don't want to get drunk. But I was still going to meetings. And I couldn't figure out what the hell was going wrong. What was wrong with me? Why, you know, I'm going to AA meetings. They told me to get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. They told me to help come out early. I came out early. They told me to stay afterwards. I stayed afterwards. They told me to do this. They told me to do that. I'm doing these things. But nothing's working. I'm still drunk. I'm still getting drunk. I'm still obsessed with alcohol. Finally, about a week after my last drink, I was really beside myself. And it was a Friday night. I went to this meeting. There was only six of us in the meeting. It was a traditions meeting, so go figure. Unfortunately, I love traditions meeting. And I asked the group there, I said, would you mind if I sabotage this meeting? I need help. And they said, yeah. So they stopped the meeting. I said, look. And I just started talking. And I talked, and I talked, and I talked, and I shared what was going on. And I kept on referring to my program. My program. My program. And there were some bright enough old-timers in that meeting. And one gentleman in particular pointed across the room and he said, Cam, he said, I know what your problem is. And I said, what? He said, it's not your program. He says, it's the program. And you have to submit yourself to it. And I said, do you mean I have to submit myself to what's written in here? And he said, yes, that's it. And I finally got it that night. And no, there wasn't any type of lightning flash or anything like that. But I had this moment of crystal clarity that I still have to this day. And every morning when I get up, that crystal clarity is there. And God literally restored my sanity. Now I'm able to continue. I'm now working on steps 8 and 9. I've been able to thoroughly go through this book. And I've even questioning, like it says in the book, it says that you should consider doing step 3 with somebody else. I went to my sponsor and I had this whole sheet printed out of all the important components that I wanted to talk about when we were discussing steps 1, 2, and 3. I wanted to make sure that I had steps 1, 2, and 3 nailed down before I started my step 4. And I sat with him and I said, Larry, it says here in the big book that it's suggested that you do step 3 with somebody else. And he said to me, he said, Cam, he said, I've never seen that before. And I said, that's great. I'm being as thorough as I can. I want to do this right. But that night, God restored my sanity. He literally was, it was the most incredible thing. I drove home that night. The next day I woke up, I had absolutely no desire to drink. Last night I got in from Toronto. I got in at the airport. I left very early, 5:30 in the morning. Didn't get a chance to have any lunch, didn't get a chance to have any breakfast. So I get to the hotel around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. I'm just starving. The hotel restaurant didn't open until 5. So I went and rested a little bit. Went down to the hotel restaurant last night at 5 o'clock. And it was just me. The restaurant section was the lights were off, so I sat at the bar. The guy asked me what I'm having to drink. I said, I have a glass of water. Starving. I said, I'll have a menu. Give me a menu. Then I order my food. And meanwhile, while I'm waiting for my food to come, he's sort of staying over at the bar, and we're sort of having a light conversation. And he starts opening these bottles of wine. And he's sort of testing them, you know. And he opened this one, and I was watching television. And he blurted out to me. He said, this isn't good. And I said, well, what isn't good? And he said, well, the cork in this bottle is dry. And of course, it may be a bit of a surprise to you folks here tonight, but I know a little bit about wine. So we got talking about wine, right? We got some of the dry cork, and I asked him what kind of wine it was, you know, the grape varieties, and all sort of the conversation about wine. So I'm not thinking, you know, that there's any risks here at all whatsoever. I'm here to eat. My motive is pure. I'm more interested in engaging in conversation. So it was really funny. So he opened the bottle, and he poured himself this little glass, and within 5 seconds, he poured a second one and put it right in front of me. And he was, like, looking at me, waiting for me to take a drink to taste it. So, you know, so I'm sitting there thinking, you know, oh, this is interesting. You know, I haven't had this experience yet. And so I picked up the glass and I switched it around, you know, and I sort of went along in the conversation. I smelled it and put it back down. And, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine from back home, an AA member about this. And I said, you know, this program is so powerful. Like, I was completely protected from that first drink. I wasn't even thinking about that glass of booze that was in front of me. I was more interested in the conversation we were having, honestly. And there's no way that I would ever be in that state of mind prior to that spiritual experience where God literally brought about a psychic change in me. And he completely removed that desire to drink. And he gave me this incredible... He took away the convulsion and the obsession and the desire for alcohol, and he replaced it. You know, I often thought when I was a kid, I was like this... I always wanted attention. I always wanted love. I was like this black hole. I was just sucking it in. I loved attention. And it's like the only thing... You know, alcohol kind of filled that for a little while, but the only thing that can fill that hole in my life is God. And God's done that for me. And I now, every day, I have the great privilege of every single day when I get up in the morning to make a choice. I was sharing this with my dad. My dad is a Baptist minister. And I was sharing this with him. I said, this is one of the great blessings of being an alcoholic, of being a recovered alcoholic. One of the great blessings of being a recovered alcoholic is every day I get to make a choice. I can either choose to live or I can choose to die. And that's staring me right in the face. I'm dealing with a terminal illness that could kill me, that will kill me if it goes untreated. And I'm sharing this with my dad. I said, it's so wonderful because every morning when I get up and I pray to God to relieve me of the bondage of self, and He does. And I get to go out. And, you know, I believe that this program is designed so that I can live. I can now go out and live my life. And in the short time that I've been around, folks, some amazing things have happened. It's amazing what happens when you listen to God, eh? It's so amazing when you actually listen. And I spent 15 years in the financial services industry. I spent most of those years lying and cheating my way up in the industry. Probably the craziest job I had in the financial services industry was I don't have a degree in law at all, and I ended up becoming a vice president and chief compliance officer for Sun Life Financial Worldwide, which is a ridiculous position. But I lied my way there. I was very good at lying. It just seemed to be, for me, the way to go. It was the easier, softer way for me. Lying and cheating. And unfortunately, you know, I could always lie myself into something, but people eventually would see what's really going on. And then it would, you know, things would eventually fall through. But since coming here, I've actually resigned from a 15-year career, and I've started into another business. And it's fascinating because this business was sitting under my nose for years and years and years. And this business, as we determined, really needed my help, and I needed it. And that's the reason why I'm down here in Jersey. Secondary to speaking here, of course. But you know, in the short time that I've been around, you know, I'm thankful that I had a great foundation growing up about spirituality, a great concept of a loving God who cares for me. I became very angry with this loving God, but now I know. Because all He was saying to me was, Cam, stop making it about you. That's all He wanted. And the very moment, I can literally identify to the last minute, the very moment when I stopped making it about me is when my life changed. And that's when God changed me and took my obsession away. And so I am so excited about the future. The fact that I've been able to even get up to step 8 is a miracle in my mind. You know, I could never finish anything when I was in my cups, when I was in my alcoholism. I thank God for honesty. I'd like to finish off with just with a few thoughts here. You know, I've heard AA members talk about the so-called isms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And honestly, I'll be very honest with you, I'm not exactly sure what all these isms are. I got thinking about this, you know, I was driving down the road a couple of weeks ago, and I heard this advertisement come on the radio, and they talked about hilities. And I thought, you know, I've heard of these isms, but, you know, I kind of like this idea of these hilities. And you know, what I mean by hilities is, I'll give you an example. Probably the number one hility that Alcoholics Anonymous is already starting to give me is credibility. And it's amazing what happens when you start telling the truth to people. It's unbelievable what happens. Responsibility. I'm actually putting in a full day's work now. I'm not lying about what I'm doing and where I'm at. That's an incredible thing. I know normal people would never talk that way, but as an alcoholic, that's a big thing for me. Respectability. Stability. I'm already starting to see stability come back in my life. I got all kinds of stuff that I got to fix. Folks, you know, I almost destroyed myself financially. But you know what? I'm okay with the fact that there's no easier, softer way. For the first time in my life, I'm actually starting to take care of myself. I love myself now. I'm actually starting to take care of myself. I'm enjoying taking care of myself. I'm enjoying spending the time, putting in the effort to take care of myself. Sensibility, being more sensitive towards others, towards my children. Accountability. You know, I did my fifth step just recently. And, you know, they say you should do it with a member of clergy, or you should maybe... I decided to do it with my sponsor because I love the idea of accountability. Now my sponsor knows absolutely everything about me. And I think that's a really good thing. Social ability. Flexibility. Live and let live. You know? Availability. When I tell my kids I'm going to see them, I see them now. And that's a wonderful thing. Anyways, thanks for having me. Chris and I had dinner tonight, and it was an honor to spend time with you, Chris. And Chris is coming up into my area on November 7th at a one-day roundup, and really looking forward to that. And I just want to thank all of you. I'm so grateful for this incredible, powerful program of Alcoholics Anonymous and what the future holds for all of us. Thank you.